Welcome to the Voices of Gremlin, a digital oral history podcast, a series exploring the rich history of Gremlin State University, the city of Gremlin, and the people who make it. This podcast is a collaboration project between students and faculty of the History Department of Gremlin State University, as well as faculty from the University of Arkansas. This season of the Voices of Gremlin, a digital oral history project, has been made possible in part by a grant from the Mississippi River Delta Initiative, Miss Delta, and funded by the Gulf Research Program of National Academies of Sciences, Engineering, and Medicine. Previous funding was provided by the Louisiana Endowment for Humanities, the National Endowment for the Humanities in the partnership with the Social Science Research Council, and the LaPage Center for the History and the Public Interest of Villanova University. Any views, findings, conclusions, or recommendations expressed by this podcast do not necessarily represent those of the funders or the producers of the podcast. Greetings. My name is Olivia Moore, a student at the History Department, and I'm here with...
Hello. This is Dr. Coletta White. I'm an associate professor here in the Criminal Justice Department at Grambling State, and I also serve as the director of the PhD in Criminology and Justice Administration program.
All right, Dr. White, tell us a little about yourself. What were you doing the fall of 2005?
Ooh, it was a lot going on in fall of 2005. However, I believe I would have been in my junior, going into senior year. I was a double major, psychology and criminal justice. I was pretty active on campus at that time. Of course, I would have been taking classes, but I would have probably also been getting prepared for... Let me see, what's fall? That would have been the homecoming step show. We would have been gearing up for some major programs in SGA. I was a member of Entourage, the gospel choir led by Mr. Chad Harry. And of course, I was still remaining active in Alpha Phi Sigma, Gamma Beta Phi, you name it. So a lot of stuff going on.
You mentioned the SGA. How did the SGA prepare for the evacuees' arrival during Hurricane Katrina?
Speaking from the SGA perspective, but then also as just a student on campus, it was pretty hectic all around. However, I think Grambling State at that time, I think we did an awesome job making sure the communication lines were open between not only SGA, but all the other clubs and organizations on campus at that time. So I believe the role of SGA, which of course would have come down from administration, was to get all of the leaders on campus at that time. The word went out that, hey, not only will we need you to be prepared to assist with any operations on campus, but it wasn't said in those terms that we also needed to prepare for individuals that may need assistance that we cannot help on campus. One thing I recall was not only were we preparing to, so when the call went out, we then put the call out to all of our fellow classmates and then those of us who were also in other organizations. We got those leaders together, all the members together, and I was a part of the groups that helped lead the efforts at the Intramural Center. But alongside that, there was also sort of like some subgroups that were gearing up to assist those who were not students from other universities, but to help persons who on campus or other students on campus who had family members that were coming down from Hurricane Katrina. And so it was kind of twofold because everybody was directed to, what's it called, the Intramural Center to welcome in and prepare the families that were coming into the university. Because it wasn't just families. So I guess that's what I'm trying to get to. It wasn't just students. So while we were bringing up students from New Orleans, we were bringing up everybody else who was coming from that way.
So how did SGA try to help basic necessities? What were the housing conditions for the refugees like?
Was a lot going on there too. So again, if I'm speaking from what I remember from the Intramural Center, I don't know where we got them from, but, and I'm laughing while I say this because we know we have so many different entities when I think about facilities right now, how Grambling State operates. But at that time, somewhere on the campus, there were a few hundred beds that were, I don't know if they were sitting in a building or whatever have you, but I remember, again, that was part of that call there were folks just lined up. We literally did like an assembly line. And I think like the football players and some of the larger guys, they would take them out of the empty dorm rooms and they would walk them out and they would pass the beds along and we would get those beds into the intramural center. And so we were there pretty much the full day and overnight laying out the beds. Again, most of the organizations we had went, bought up all of the sheets and beddings, and we had to put the beddings on, the beddings and the pillows and the sheets on all of the beds in the intramural center, and then we had to prepare like individual baskets of toiletries, and so those included at that time, of course, like snacks and then personal hygiene items. You name it, but we were putting those baskets together while also preparing the bedding. But I believe we focused more on the bedding first because we knew everybody would be tired. And so we had to make certain and have that stuff prepared.
SGA was partnering with a lot of organizations, of course, as student leaders on campus. But as a member of D9, what did DST contribute to, and did y'all work with LA Tech?
I want to say yes. Okay, so again, there was every single organization on campus. It was organized so that everybody had to be at a specific spot. For us, we were led by our advisor, Sora Gwendolyn Giles. At that time, she was the advisor of the Delta Iota chapter. And we were responsible, from what I remember, she was sort of the spearhead or the lead person at the intramural center. We all, of course, everybody had on their individual shirts, but we had on our Delta shirts, and we were required to, one, make certain that while we were looking out for other individuals, we also got the call from the chapters down in New Orleans. So, for example, at Dillard, we have Beta Gamma chapter. We had gotten a call from their advisors and some of their members to make sure that we, you know, found them when they got off the buses and such. But yes, so we were responsible for a certain part of the intramural center, putting up the beds again, getting those toiletries together. And I think we did the toiletry items for probably 2 or 3 days. But yes, that is what I recall as far as what Delta did. We did bring in Kappa Chi over from LIHTC. And again, that was just us calling over to say, hey, can you come over and help us out? And then we had a couple of sorors come in from Shreveport and then, of course, Monroe. They came in, too, and helped us with that effort.
Talk us through a little bit. What was it like when the buses arrived? What was it like when they got off the buses and getting that influx of people?
Whew. So recalling that one is actually and I know folks probably don't like to talk about this a lot, but it was hard and kind of scary. It was really scary because we were trying to, you know, smile and hug and welcome those folks. It was so many buses. It was so many buses. And all of the buses were full. And again, some of them were students that had just, some of them floated out of the top of hotels that they were supposed to be safe there, and they weren't. And again, alongside some of the students, and if you even look at the yearbooks, you'll see there were like families. And so the reason why that was also tough was because while we're trying to do our job, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska. I don't have any family in New Orleans, but some of my friends and some of my sorority sisters, these were their family members. And so I was feeling for them in that same moment because they're trying to, again, get stuff prepared, but they're also getting the calls about their family members. And some of them were seeing but they're also excited that their family members were getting off the bus because that means they were alive. And so I was just trying to imagine at that time, like, oh my God, I couldn't imagine what they're feeling like in that moment. Excuse me. But I will say this, as hectic as it was, and it was so many people, jam-packed. Again, we were in the assembly center, but the entire campus was jam-packed. I remember thinking, like, wow, we were really organized. And so while it was hectic, it was still calm at the same time. And I think it was because people were still trying to comprehend what was going on, or making sure that we didn't add any additional, like, stress or strain on those who literally are here because they don't have anything else back in New Orleans. And so I just remember, I don't think anybody slept. I remember that. Because once they got there, we wanted to make sure, again, everybody had a bed, everybody had toiletries. Then the next step came, we had to start helping the students that were from the other schools get prepared to, now they may have to come to school at Grambling, right? Again, I'm not only recalling, but the one that keeps coming to mind is Dillard, because I know we had a lot of students from Dillard and other places, but now our student population basically, you know, it seemed like it doubled at that time. And so we had to make sure too that those students were, now we had to get clothing, right? We had to get supplies. But then again, we just kind of also had to help folks kind of navigate sort of where to go and what to do. And we did that for a few weeks. And so again, that was what was going on campus. But because Grambling is such a small community, the campus is technically the town. The city. And so with that also came, because right across from the Intramural Center, you know, were student apartments and family apartments. And I just remember there were some apartments that were one or two bedrooms, and they had 15, 20 people in them. I think we took in, my roommate and I, we lived in the back of Grambling, and in our duplex, I think we may have had like 12 or 13 people in our apartment. And so everybody did it, though. It was just kind of what we did. And so everybody took in, whether it was a student or a family member of a student. We just kind of made it work.
So as a student, but also a junior / senior, you spoke a lot about how you were a little bit mentally. What resources do you all have as far as counseling or things of that nature for the students, not only for the physical needs, but the mental needs?
If I can remember correctly, I think similar to now, one of the, I guess, key components, they tried to bring a lot of folks into the counseling center. It wasn't as large as it is now, but I think we ended up, I think we brought people in, and again, I'm drawing back on Delta, but our advisor and some other older sorority members reached out, and they had folks come and sort of try to help us sort of navigate our, I guess, psychological well-being at that time, which was all kind of over the place. But more importantly, again, I think I remember them putting in like stations or something, because it wasn't just us, you know, that was going through kind of, it was more importantly those students and those families that were living in the area now at that time. So I do believe they sort of directed us, or maybe even made it a requirement, I can't remember, but they did put some extra folks into the counseling center. But I also remember it kind of just being really like, because everybody was so busy and it was kind of overwhelming too. And so you kind of can only do so much. And I just remember, I think everybody kind of took a part in it at that time. All of the teachers kind of just like paused for a minute. And I think we address it in a lot of our classes too, right? A lot of our teachers, which we kind of do now when things happen on campus, we kind of try to just sit in it and reflect and kind of discuss to see how we can navigate at the moment.
You mentioned a little bit about students integrating into campus. So you're bringing sort of Dillard into Grambling. So what was that like to almost have the two colleges, or try to get those students to be able to continue their academic journey while all of this stuff was unfolding?
It was kind of weird because, you know, I think about, you know, you kind of have your set class at the beginning of the semester, and then now you have all these new folks into the class, you know, trying to, you know, basically integrating into the class. And again, it was just kind of weird because, I guess maybe I could compare that to COVID, where I think our class structures just kind of changed a little bit because we still kind of have the same classrooms that we had then. And so where you may have even 30, 35 in a room, now it's like 50, depending on your major, right? A lot of students in the room. But like I said, I think the format of the teaching changed a little bit. And so we didn't concentrate so much on, I guess, some of the topics. Like I said, I think some of the topics changed. I do remember some of the topics changing. But more importantly, I think, too, some of our student organizations, we also revamped some of our programs, right? And so we tried to make certain that we were hitting different scopes, that we could bring in those students that had come in to the university. But I don't recall anything really negative or, I guess, stressful, aside from us trying to make sure that they would have all of the resources that they needed, because we knew that the transition would be harder for them than it would be for us, if that makes sense.
What were some of the larger things going, maybe more university-wide, in which you all maybe partnered with particular faculty members, particular parts of campus, or the administration?
Okay. Yeah, so I do remember, and again, this may have been part of the whole, let's look forward to like the healing process, and again, taking in everything that was going on at the time. But I do remember now the vigils that we had. I want to say if we didn't have them weekly, I know they were at least, yeah, they probably were weekly. But similar to now, we'd have the students along with the faculty and staff, we'd all meet up on campus and have the prayer vigils and sort of reflect on kind of what was going on, and to think about just trying to send positive vibes to all of the students and the families that were in the area. Even with those prayer vigils, it would still kind of sort of be like a community effort, sort of course, because we're so connected to the city of Grambling, you know, the mayor and everybody else, along with the city officials, would always come and speak at those events as well. And then another thing that I can recall is thinking about some of the larger initiatives and trying to, again, maintain some of those resources for those folks who had come up to the Grambling area. And so to bring that back down to like the organization level, whereas the university would sort of try to integrate not only the students, but the families into maybe like the food program in the CAF, right? And I remember, yes, you know, like they would get like special cards and stuff so that they could eat along with the rest of the university folks. We would also sort of change our program so that a lot of them became donating events, right? So can you bring water? And it, even like some of our parties and stuff would turn into your admissions fee would be, could you bring some water, some canned goods? Could you bring some clothing? Because a lot of the larger scale, you know, like distribution places were again ran by most of the student organizations. And so we wanted to make sure, again, folks are going to need more than one or two, you know, changes of clothing. And so we wanted to make sure that we were always getting in new clothes so that when the folks would come, we could make sure we had clothes and additional toiletries and such for them. But yeah, I do recall, I guess, the larger initiatives trickling down back to the student organizations.
Transitioning into the aftermath, as the state recovered from the hurricane and then into the spring semester, did you notice any impacts as far as budget cuts or things of that nature?
That I can't. And again, I could have been a naive student at the time. I remember there being a big issue, because initially when it first happened, the whole goal was to, we had to make sure these students should still get to graduate. We got to make sure they finish their classes. And so everybody was on board to do whatever we needed to do. And again, that's not us, but I mean, you know, administration and local and state folks. And then the following semester, so that would have been the fall. So that following spring and upcoming fall, I remember there was an issue with funding. And so all of a sudden, now it was like a question of where should these students be able to go, right? Because now they're technically, like there weren't enough funds to either pay for them to come here, or does their tuition that they were paying at the other institution. And again, I can't remember what it was, but I remember there was an issue with like scholarships and something. And the students that were on scholarships at their other universities, they had an issue with bringing that stuff over to Grambling, and financial aid became an issue, or something wrong with the processing of them trying to get registered. And so I remember that next upcoming fall semester, there was just like a long hold on something because they didn't know sort of like where to place those students and how their schooling would be paid for. It was something weird like that. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I do remember there being something of a, now all of a sudden, like, how do they complete?
So looking back, how do you see coastal effects affecting the whole state?
So when we think about, I guess, at a state level, again, I'm going to draw on kind of how that impacts Grambling, and that the economic hit was tremendous, because even from a student perspective, I know that one of the major events that everybody looks forward to is the Bayou Classic, right, which is held in New Orleans at the stadium. And of course, Bayou Classic was different that year. That year, I believe it was in Dallas. They moved, Dallas or Houston? I want to say Dallas. They moved everything to Dallas. And so instead of everybody going down to New Orleans, it culture shift, but it changed the culture for a minute, right? And it had an impact on Grambling, because events like the Bayou Classic, but also because we realized at that time, oh, I can't believe I forgot about this. Myself, along with some of my other good buddies, we started to take trips down with our friends who were from that area to help them rebuild their houses. And I just remember the devastation that you mentioned earlier as we were driving by. And I remember thinking to myself, like, there's no way somebody could come back from this. Like, how do you even rebuild after this? Because of that, we had to restructure a lot of major events from the university level, but then on the state level too. Conferences were postponed or rescheduled. I remember we started to get impacted here, which I know happened in a lot of areas, because of the redistribution of people. So before, everybody who were the initial shock and trying to get everybody out, when they started to relocate, they started to go towards the Dallas-Houston area. That's where the families had to actually move. And so because of that, the economic hit was tremendous. But then there were also just certain sides. And again, I have friends who lived in certain areas that are still not, they still haven't recovered and haven't been rebuilt. And they just kind of were pushed to the side. So I think more so too, aside from the economic hit, I think a lot of agencies and organizations, some of them try to start allocating funds to deal with the psychological aftermath for persons who were impacted. I think now, not so much, of course, but in terms of like the landscape of what that looks like, folks are still traumatized from that time. Was that coming up with something else? Oh, okay. And so I think that's something that we always should sort of think about and take into consideration when we're talking about what the coastal change of what that looks like for Louisiana is. It hit New Orleans really hard, but I think the impact that it had on the smaller towns where folks were initially evacuated to also changed at that time.
Is there anything that we missed that you would like to mention or discuss?
I think I kind of hit on it before, but I think an important thing to consider or remember about that time, the horrible event that was Hurricane Katrina, is that the conversation always goes to the larger entities, right? So, like, how did the state, how did the government assist New Orleans or did not assist New Orleans? But I think people forget about the smaller entities like the Gramblings and the Alexandrias or the, you know, the Opelousas, and which is still down in that area. But I think about, again, Grambling at that time and how it was just a major shift in how we operated. It was, you know, we go from 5,000 to 6,000-7,000 people. And the city wasn't built for that, right? So a lot of the stuff we have now, we didn't have then. Our willingness to not only open our arms and do what was right, I think the determination of those who were not in power or had a lot of power or a lot of say-so about how we could do things, I think those folks need to be. So I do appreciate this because I think those folks need to be talked about sometimes. The small people.
Thank you so much, Dr. White.
You've been listening to the Voices of Grambling, a digital oral history podcast, a production of the students and the faculty of Grambling State University History Department, along with the faculty of University of Arkansas. Be sure to listen into one of our other episodes, and if you have a voice you would like to share or have a nomination for a voice that needs to be heard, feel free to contact the History Department for more information.